Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. Championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. My guest today is BYU running back Hinkley Ropati. Hinkley, thank you for taking a few minutes. It's always good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you guys for having me, seriously.
You bet. This is it's fun. We got a lot of stuff to get to with you, but I wanted to start with some. So you have been married for, what, you said about 14, 15 months. So still, you still consider yourself newlyweds, right? So how has being a newlywed been in the last, you know, almost year and a half?
It's been probably the greatest blessing. So it's been awesome. I mean, I feel like, I think I've told this before, but I don't know how I was able to function the way I did before I met my wife. And so she definitely brings the best out of me. And so it's been really great.
Okay. So we might as well, you know, it's an opportunity to give your wife a shout out. What's her name? Tell everybody about your wife.
Exactly. Yeah. So my wife is Taylin Nguyen Ropati. And we actually met here at BYU. She came to work with the football team at one of the summers or one of the fall camps as a trainer. That was about 3 years ago, and so that's kind of where our story started. And then fast forward to now, we've been married for about a little over a year, and we're expecting a little girl on the way, and so we're super excited.
Wow, well, congratulations. So a house of two is about to be a house of three. Like, are you guys ready for this?
Yeah, no, we're definitely ready for it. I mean, a lot of prayers obviously went behind it, because it's definitely a big change. You know what I mean? Getting married is a big change in itself. But then also, you know, bringing life into this world and having another, you know, person solely depending on you is definitely another big decision. But we knew in our hearts, you know, we prayed about it, and we knew that it was something that we always wanted to do, something I grew up aspiring to be. So I'm super excited.
So you know it's a girl. So have you gone to the point yet where you know names? Or are you narrowing the names down, or do you have one? I don't know if you want to
announce
this on the podcast.
No, that's fine. No.
What are the names that you're considering, or what's the one that you've decided on?
So we've actually decided. So we're actually naming her after my mom.
Oh.
And so we're naming her Lena. Lena is my mom's name, right? Yeah. And so we're naming her after my late mom. And then and then the middle name is kind of the part we're trying to figure out. And so that's kind of, but, you know, we hope that just come over time, you know. But for the most part, we're pretty locked on the first name. And so we're excited.
That's very, very cool. And we're certainly going to talk about your mom and that part of your story a little bit later on. But since you brought that up now, what type of tribute is that for you to your mom?
My mom was definitely the person I feel like in my opinion was my hero, you know. Just the way she was, the way she served, she was definitely a great example of someone who would give her shirt off her back for someone else, who would literally, even when we have nothing, would always make sure to find a way to serve others. And so that's one thing that I've always found very inspiring and always looked up to my mom for, you know. And so to have my daughter, you know, when we found out we're having a daughter, I for some reason I had a feeling that my mom had something to do with it, you know. And so we're super excited to name her after my mom, because, you know, that's someone that I hope she can emulate in that aspect, you know, someone who loved the gospel, lived the gospel with everything she had known and served others wholeheartedly. And so I hope she takes after that.
That's very cool. That's congratulations to you guys. That's certainly, I mean, I have kids, so I remember our first, and it was, I mean, it to say it's life-changing probably doesn't give it justice. I mean, it really is. So congratulations to you guys. That's very, very cool. All right, so let's talk a little football. So you had to sit out last season due to injury, and I wanted to start by talking about the year before that, in 2022. You were down the depth chart in 2022. How did you handle that year, knowing that you were down the depth chart?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that is really the belief in myself and my abilities, and then also the coaches. As Coach Harvey, right? He continued to instill that belief and confidence in me. And I don't know. I mean, obviously that year we had a pretty stacked room. I mean, at that year we brought in Chris Brooks, right? And then we also had Lopini Couture and some really great backs, you know, some of the best backs we've had here. And so I honestly was very eager to learn from these guys and just continue. But I also knew what I brought to the table as well, you know, and Coach Harvey always reminded me about those abilities and those things I can bring to the table. It was just a matter of making sure I was available to make those things happen. And I think earlier that year, I had a shot. I had an opportunity to really, you know, kind of put my name out there with the Notre Dame game. It just didn't work out the way we planned, you know what I mean? Obviously, I went out there, had a good little A-run, like, I was like an A-yard run, and then, there was, you know, I fumbled, you know, and things like that. And, you know, it was one of those things where it was frustrating because I felt so good. And even though I, you know, that happened, we got the ball back. I kind of just threw that in the back burner and I was ready to go, you know, but obviously didn't get the opportunity and was kind of put in the doghouse for a little bit. You know, I kind of had to like fight through that adversity of just staying mentally locked in. But like I said, I feel like the biggest thing was just I had confidence in myself and my abilities. I know that the next opportunity I'm getting, I'm going to make sure that I make the most of it. And I'm grateful for the coaches because they definitely believed in me and they knew that I you know what I had in me, and it was just a matter of going out there and putting it out there, you know what I mean? Even every day in practice they'll constantly remind me, like, hey, you just gotta, if you can just go out there and just do it, you know what I mean, you have all the physical capabilities and all these things, it's just a matter of you going out there and actually doing it. And so, you know, once I got my opportunity, I feel like I just kind of just ran with it. And so that's kind of how it happened.
Well, and you literally, when you got your opportunity, you ran with it. I mean, coaches always talk about making sure that you're ready for the time that your number is called. And your number was called in a very crucial game against Boise State, in which you came up big. And I think you were talking about your confidence. Like, even though you were down the depth chart, you knew you still had confidence in yourself and your abilities. How big was that game for you to be able to realize that all the confidence that you felt inside, you know, that it was justified?
Oh, I mean, it was awesome. I mean, I remember just going out there and, you know, being able to play, make those plays, I feel like everything was just coming, you know, full circle. It's like, okay, this is exactly what I've been. And even then, even after making the first play, it was just like I was just fiending for more. Like, I don't know. It was just, despite, like, you know, scoring on that touch and, you know, the thing that happened that play, I just felt like there's so much more I wanted to do. And I was just super eager and I just didn't want it to stop. And so, you know, I felt like, I mean, like I said, the coaches and everything, I feel like they helped prepare me, like, mentally. Coach Lani always talked about maximizing our role, no matter what it is. And I feel like every day I kind of attacked practice and everything just with that mentality, because, like, you never know when your opportunities come, right? And when it's there, you want to make the most of it so more can continue to come, right? And so I feel like that's kind of how I went into the game. And so, yeah.
What do you think is in your makeup? Because, look, there's a lot of people that can't or don't take the attitude that you had, that, you know, I'm gonna stick with it. I still believe in myself. My time will come. I know I want it now, but it's not happening right now, but my time will come. A lot of guys aren't able to take that type of approach. Why do you think you were able to do that? What in your makeup allowed you to be able to take that type of approach?
I think a big part of it comes from the way I look back. I think it's the way I was raised too, and the way my parents brought me up, you know, in the gospel and things like that. I think there's so many factors that went into it, but a big part of it is just the way my parents taught me. I think before I left on my mission, I remember I wasn't really highly recruited out of high school, right? I had all my offers were some D2 schools and Division I AA, you know, and so I didn't have any schools that I was really like excited to go to, you know, but I was excited for the opportunity to go play anywhere. But then while I was on my mission, I feel like that's where I really, really learned patience and really learned like that good things happen to those that continue to wait and continue to, I mean, we see it all over the scriptures, you know, guys who are patient, you know, and you wait on their blessings and continue just to, you know, move forward faithfully. And you know, and so I felt like that's been the biggest thing that I've always tried to apply in my life. You know, it's like, it may not look so good right now, but if I continue to put in the work, continue to grind, I know one day it'll all pay off, you know, whether that's on the field or in life in general or, you know, in other future endeavors. I just know it will if I just continue to stay with them. And I think that's something that my dad has taught me, and I think I've been able to strengthen that when I was on my mission, you know what I mean? Being out there for 2 years and, you know, some days are hard, like a lot of days are hard, you know what I mean, when you're out there on a mission. Most of the days are hard, right? And you really do need to, and I feel like keeping that internal perspective that, you know what I mean, this is all part of it, and it's all going to be worth it. There's lessons I need to learn along the way. And I feel like that's kind of how I've always carried myself, especially when it comes to football too, you know, and life overall. So, yeah.
You've mentioned your coaches, and you've mentioned Coach Harvey Unga a lot. What does that relationship mean to you, both as your coach, but also on a personal level? Because I know you guys are tight. What does that relationship mean to you?
It means everything. Harvey was the reason why I ended up coming here, right? I remember the first conversation I had with them, and I just knew that I wanted to play for this guy. I mean, I grew up watching the guy, you know what I mean? Running over dudes and doing numbers on guys and, you know, looking up to him. So to see him from a coaching perspective, to see from a player perspective, right? It's just, for me, it was just, it meant everything. You know, not only is he a great coach, but he's a great person. And what he does is he not only instills confidence in you to go out there and perform at your best, but to also go out in life and really just be successful. And I feel like that's something that I'm so grateful for Harvey for. I mean, Coach Harvey, he talks about it every day. He doesn't really, the most important thing is who we are off the field. And I think having someone like that believes in you and continues to be there for you every day in and day out, just makes you play harder. Like, I feel like when I'm out there, you know, I'm not only playing for the, you know, my last name and the people, my family and so forth, but it's also for the people who believe in me and put me in the position to be out there. And so, yeah.
We talked about that Boise State game specifically in 2022. You, after that game, obviously it was a fantastic game. You end up playing in every game the rest of the season. So at the end of 2022, going into 2023 last season, what was your mindset heading into last year after kind of finishing on a high note and like, okay, this is going to be my chance? What was your mindset going into 2023?
Most definitely just to come in and continue to just excel. I mean, I've always, you know, obviously it's always been a dream of mine to play at the next level or to get to as far as I can. And I've always had that mentality that I just got to continue to elevate my game, continue to get better. And so I came in with the mindset that I needed to be the number one guy. And so I've had plenty of conversation with the coaches, and, you know, that was the plan. And so we worked and had a great off season. It was tough, you know, ending or happening what happened.
Yeah, tell people what happened, because you're in fall camp.
Yeah.
You're weeks away from the start of the season, and then you get hurt.
Exactly. And so it was pretty tough, you know, especially when you've worked off all off season to get to that point. You know, was definitely competing. It was doing good. We brought in Aiden Robbins and Deion Smith, which was really good. You know what I mean? Those types of talent. I love when we bring those types of talent into the program, because it only elevates our game. You know what I mean? And so it definitely helped me kind of just, you know, not get comfortable and just keep you know, putting my foot on the gas. And then, yeah, just literally, I think it was like a week and a half away from the first game. You know, we had a scrimmage and got rolled up in a tackle in one of the scrimmages, you know, just one of those accidents that happened in practice, and ended up tearing my meniscus completely off and you know, I think it was my MCL as well. And so it was definitely a tough break, you know, it was a tough decision to make to not play that season, because I could have played on it, but then the repercussions of afterwards would have been like, I would never be able to play sports when I get to my knee replacement by 30, you know what I mean? So that wasn't the plan. And so, you know, I got to think of like bigger than football. And so, you know, making the decision to not be able to play last year and be out for the season was definitely tough, but I knew it was the best decision. And so it's, you know, I mean, it opened the door to be back this year, obviously, you know what I mean?
Being
and
able
so,
to have the red shirt, I mean, it helped. It's difficult to, you know, nobody ever wants to use it, but it's there for circumstances like you're talking about. So even though you're losing that year, you're not losing a year. So it probably helped at least ease some of that pain, right?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, knowing that I still had that red shirt was definitely good. It's just, but then again, at the end of the day, like, you never want to miss a season, especially coming off of, the year I was coming off of 2022, I was just like, I feel like I was coming in with a whole different confidence, with experience now, you know what I mean? Once you, it's different to have confidence, but when you have experience, confidence from experience, like, you're just itching to get back out there.
You had talked about in the 2022 season, while you weren't seeing the field as much as you would have wanted, you were still learning and you're paying attention and you're learning so that when you did get your opportunity, you could take advantage of some things. Having sat out the 2023 season and watched, what did you learn that you can put into action in 2024?
The biggest thing that I feel like I've been able to take from last season, just like you said, just from watching, was really I feel like my IQ is like in the game, you know, right? Everybody talks about football IQ, you know, and you continue to learn. The game of football is like something that you continue to learn no matter what. And so even coaches will tell me, like, even now them like coaching for 10 plus years, they're continuing to learn the game. And I feel like that's one thing that was the opportunity I was able to have last year, just being able to just sitting out and watching the game, was seeing it from a different perspective, you know, understanding how everything works on offense. Before, I felt like I was just focused on my position and doing my job. And being able to have that whole offseason last year, I kind of was able to learn the entire playbook. You know, I feel confident I can step up at QB and run the offense, you know? And so, which is something
Is that a possibility? are we going to see some plays with you at quarterback?
I don't know about that. But I definitely took pride in understanding the playbook in depth. And not only that, it's also, you know, watching film and seeing how our offense runs and how it needs to be ran, yeah. You know, and how that, like, my part as a running back, how I can make that happen more efficiently. I feel like that's definitely something that I took away from last season, you know, seeing that some things that, because obviously, you know, the people talked about the run game and what things happened last year, you know, and then there's a lot of factors that went into it, you know, and so just being able to see it from like, you know, an outside perspective, look, you know, watching on TV and so forth, I feel like that's one of the big things that I was able to take away, was just understanding how I fit in the scheme and how I can more efficiently do my job that makes everybody's jobs easier. And so, yeah, it's been awesome. And so, I mean, it sucked to watch him, but it was awesome learning so much.
How much more enthusiastic are you about the possibilities for what you and the other running backs can do? Because look, you touched on it last year. The running backs took some heat. I mean, fans were upset, and you know, I know that the offensive line has been retooled, and I know that the guys on the offensive line and the new coaching staff for the O-line, they're really excited about what's possible this year. When you combine, you know, added motivation on the running backs and you being back and healthy and a revamped offensive line, how excited do you get on what the ground game could look like?
Oh, if you guys can see, like, fall was just a glimpse of it. And it is amazing to see how much progress we made in fall with the new changes that we made.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people understand. We had guys that never played certain positions that came in and had to kind of play last year. You know what I mean? Guys that were learning a completely different playbook that just got brought in that fall. You know what I mean? And I don't think people understand how difficult that is. And I get it. Yeah, that's your job and stuff like that. But it's a lot harder when you get out there and trying to, you know, obviously in the bright lights and then, you know, there's so many facts that go into it. So, but seeing this year, I feel like that the change that we made in the coaching staff, you know what I mean? Love the guys that were here, but I definitely think the changes that we made within the O-line, you know, Coach Woods and Gilbride, I feel like those been huge for us. And you can ask anyone in the offense room, they'll tell you the same thing. I feel like even offense, some of our offensive line will say it, you know, they feel like they've learned so much more in this just short time than they ever did in their entire 2-3 years here. And a big part of it is just because I feel like Coach Woods does a really good job of simplifying the game and breaking it down so easily. And he does a really good job of unifying us running backs, tight ends, and the O-line. It's not like the O-line and everybody's having their separate meetings of that. No, he does a really good job of unifying, understanding how our tracks and so forth helps our O-line get to their combos and so forth and the tight ends. And so you kind of see the entire picture, right? And so that's what makes me super excited, because I feel like everybody's not like – you also have people, kids, the guys that are experienced now, but at the same time, like, everybody's just we're moving as one. And so I think that's what's really exciting.
All right, my guest today is BYU running back Hinkley Ropati. We'll have more with Hinkley when we return. This is the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Thanks again to everyone out there for listening to the Deep Blue Podcast. Make sure you leave us a rating and a review on the show. You should always check out other BYU Radio podcasts as well, like Big Stories. Cleon Wall dives into incredible and amazing tales from around the Big 12 and beyond, like Kansas offensive coordinator and former BYU coach Jeff Grimes. He and his wife Sherry decided early in their marriage that they wanted to adopt a child from another country. They detail their long journey to adopting Jada from Africa and how that girl changed their family dynamic. And then there is Wyoming women's rodeo coach J.C. Hupp, who lost her parents and niece in a terrible accident, but continues to lead the cowgirls in the rodeo arena. There are so many more inspiring stories just like these two tales. So check out Big Stories on your favorite podcast platform and start listening today. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. So happy to have my guest with me today, BYU running back Hinkley Ropati. Now, we've talked a lot about football now, but let's go back a couple of years to when you were growing up. Were you always into sports? You grew up in California. Was it always sports for you?
I grew up playing football, yeah. For the most part, I feel like I've always just been involved in sports. That was kind of, you know, I just grew up around sports. You can name it. I mean, volleyball. I love volleyball, if I'm being honest. That's one of my favorite sports to play.
Like regular volleyball, beach volleyball?
No,
either?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter?
Either. Just volleyball. Yeah, volleyball. I mean, I actually played in high school as well. I played volleyball in high school, lettered in high school in volleyball. So I enjoy volleyball as well. So that's one of the sports. Basketball as well. You know, I grew up just playing those sports all the time with my family. It's just one of those things that you do growing up. But, you know, playing against the older kids and so forth. And so, yeah, sports has been a huge, huge part. I started playing football when I was 9 years old, played flag, mm-hmm. just 2 years of it. And then that's when my family and them decided, oh, you're ready for tackle. And so I went after that, started playing tackle. And, yeah, I never looked back. I've always felt like football has been a huge, you know, part of my life. As a matter of fact, I think I've missed almost every single family vacation, summer vacation. There's a lot of places my siblings and everybody's been to that I've never gone to just because I've always – I don't know. I feel like I've always been committed to, you know, I wanted to play football and I'm going to be here and work out and do everything I need to do to, you know, to excel in the field. And so, yeah.
You said you lettered in volleyball as well. Did you letter in any other sports? Obviously football being one, football, volleyball, any others than just those two?
And then I did wrestling. So my freshman year, I actually did four sports. So I did wrestling, football, volleyball, and track. And then my dad was just kind of like, my parents were like, hey, let's focus on football and so forth. You know what I mean? It's a lot of things to juggle. And so my sophomore and junior year, I did that until I was starting to get some you know, offers and things like that after my junior year. And so then my senior year, I kind of just went back and played volleyball again. So yeah. I did volleyball and just did track like as a practice, but that's the only one I lettered in was just volleyball and wrestling. And so, yeah.
That's cool. That's very cool. All right, so we've touched on your family a couple of times. We've referenced them. What was your family dynamic growing up? Brothers and sisters? Like, where specifically in California did you grow up? And then what was your family dynamic as you were growing up in Cali?
Yeah, so I grew up mainly in the Compton, Long Beach area. Okay. So I think we moved out of Compton when I was like 11, 12 years old, and then the rest of the time I was in Long Beach. We grew up. We moved out of Long Beach when I was about 16. It was like at the end of my sophomore year, 17 years old, and then that's when we moved to Downey. So we've been in Downey since then. And so yeah, I'm the second oldest out of seven kids, and so I got six siblings. I got an older brother, then it's me. I'm number two, and then a younger brother, and then four girls afterwards. And so, yeah, I mean, that's our dynamic in our family. But
were they all into sports like you were? Was that a family wide thing?
Yeah, I mean, we all loved playing sports. We all enjoyed doing it. I think my younger sister, she played volleyball, went to JUCO, and she was actually super super talented. She's really good at sports. In volleyball. And then I had a younger brother who loves playing sports. I guess I was just the only one that continued to play after high school, but my siblings, even to now, we still go. When I go back home, we're going playing pickup, you know, basketball, volleyball at chapels and stuff like that. YC activities. But for the most part, I'm the only one that's, you know, kind of still playing right now. But yeah.
So I know you've told this story before, and I know you get asked about this quite a bit, but I do. For members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, I'm sure you get asked, oh, your name is Hinkley. There is a reason why you are named Hinkley, and it's the reason most people think of. So why don't you tell like who you're named after?
Yeah, I'm named after the prophet Gordon B. Hinckley, obviously, right? And so my dad, my older brother, I told you before, my older brother is Ezra, right? And then I'm Hinckley, and my younger brother is Monson. And so my dad named us after these prophets, these Latter-day prophets, because he wants us to become men like them, you know what I mean? People who are strong in the gospel, people who live the gospel and have put their full faith in Jesus Christ and his plan for us. And I think that's kind of what my dad's overall, like his main goal for the reason why he named us those names. And it's a reminder too, you know what I mean? Every time I go somewhere, I always introduce myself as Hinckley because I love the reaction. Like, Hinckley, wow, I've never heard that before. And it's kind of an easy way to, you know, slip in the gospel right there, you know, a little quick little missionary work, you know?
Yeah. It's funny that those are the three names because when I was growing up, I can't remember exactly the year when that was the first presidency, but that was kind of the first presidency that I remember with all three men, and so they've always held a special place in my heart. So the fact that you and your brothers are all named after all three is pretty cool. So we touched on this a little bit earlier, and you're on the Deep Blue podcast, but you've also been on the TV version of Deep Blue, and in that you talked about some tragedy that hit your family. And for those that may not have seen that, what was the tragedy that you and your family went through?
Yeah, it was back in 2020. We lost our mom during COVID, during that whole COVID thing, and we lost my mom to, you know, she had a heart attack. It was one of those very sudden events. Like it was something we had no idea and did not expect. And so, yeah, it was definitely a huge loss within my family, especially, I guess, anyone that knows our family. She is literally the rock of our family. She handled everything, took care of everything. And so it was definitely tough when we went through that because it was kind of like it wasn't just like we didn't just lose our mom. We lost kind of everything, our planner, our schedule. Like she did everything. She took care of everything, organized everything in the house. So we were definitely lost for a while, you know. And so, but, you know, during that time, I feel like it brought me and my family a lot closer than we already are. I think what it also did is just it made the plan of salvation and the gospel a lot more, how would you say, for us. It made us so much more, I don't know, it gave us a sense of urgency and sense of like, you know, life is short, yeah. You know? And so, and I think that's what it did for my family. It definitely brought us closer. And so.
When you think about that time and the obviously it's difficult to go through that, but you know, you touched on it can be a faith building experience. How much of that did you and your family experience having gone through that?
Man, so much. I mean, everybody talks about the mission being a faith-building experience, and it definitely was. But I feel like a lot of the things that I've, you know, went on as a missionary and taught as a missionary didn't really hit home as hard as it did when we lost our mom. And I've told this before, but I remember on my mission, it was kind of weird because I actually had about like I think like three, four experiences. Like I can remember right now at the top of my head that I spoke at funerals, you know what I mean? And talking about the plan of salvation, talking about the, you know, that our Heavenly Father has a plan for all families. And, you know, people are losing, you know, moms and dads and brothers and younger siblings and while I was on the mission. And then to come home and then have like all those memories kind of flash, you know, back before me. It was definitely a faith building experience. I think that's one thing that I look back at that experience and I just think like, man, it was definitely, we were definitely lost for a little bit, but I think, you know, my dad did a really good job of helping us remember the gospel and remember the plan of salvation, understand that it's only temporary. We're going to see her again. And so that kind of brought a lot of peace to my siblings and I, especially the younger ones, you know?
Sure.
And so.
Your mission was to the Philippines, correct? So, and you went right out of high school, is that correct? So were you always planning to serve a mission, or was that something that, as it got closer, like maybe this is something I want to do?
Almost definitely. It wasn't even. I think I made the decision when I was in primary. Like I
love
was,
it.
I always aspired. It's one of those things where I grew up as like I had cousins who served the mission. You know, came home with some awesome stories, and it just made me even more excited to go and serve a mission. And I think making that decision very young, it wasn't really hard for me to go and leave football and leave all that because I knew it was something that I wanted to do and something that I needed to do. And so, yeah, it was awesome.
Cool. So you just hit on something that I wanted to get into. You said it wasn't that difficult to leave football to do it. So prior to, you're going through high school. When did you realize that there is going to be an opportunity to play to continue to play at whatever level it is, there's an opportunity to keep playing. When did you realize that was an option for you?
At the end of my junior year, going into my senior year, you know what I mean? A lot of schools were starting to contact me, and they're basically telling me, like, we're excited to see what you put out this year. Had a pretty solid senior year, and I think that's when it really hit me after the season. It was all like, oh, I have the opportunity to go play, you know, continue to play afterwards. But despite having those thoughts and excited, I think I kind of was already excited for the mission, you know what I mean? I think I was looking forward to going to serve my mission and then going and play ball afterwards. I think it was just something that I've always, you know, I think my dad, I think really did a good job of keeping me or him helping, having us excited to serve a mission. Yeah. And I remember growing up, my mom would always tell us growing up, I countless FHEs where we will have, and my mom would say, man, because she was a convert to the church, you know, and so she never got the opportunity to serve a mission. And she always talked about how, like, oh, I would wish that I had an opportunity to serve a mission. I think that's something I've always wanted to do. She was super excited to go serve a mission with my dad one day, you know, as a couple. And so that's something that I've always, like, you know, it was always in my head that I was going to go serve. Like, I had no doubt that I was going to go serve a mission.
Talked with a lot of athletes, and a lot of them have said that there were some opportunities coming out of high school to play that went by the wayside because they decided to serve a mission. And some coaches have actually said, are you planning to serve a mission? If you are, then we're probably not going to be interested. Did you go through that?
Almost definitely, yeah. And so, like, even with in the schools that I was, I mean, I only had like a couple D1 AA schools and then some Division II schools. And it was kind of the same thing. They asked, like, hey, so we're here that you're a member of the church. And that's kind of how a lot of the conversations went. And so, like, okay, there's only probably a couple of them that were willing to, like, we're going to be here afterwards and so forth. It's actually the reason why I originally committed to Dixie State before I left on mission, because they were one of the few schools that allowed me to go serve and come back, and I would still be able to be on scholarship and play there. And so, yeah, I mean, it definitely would suck, you know. But at the end of the day, I feel like you know, my dad has always told us, like, if you put your faith in Heavenly Father and His plan, and you know, you do what you need to do as your priesthood duties, and He's going to take care of you, and everything's going to work out the way it needs to work out. So yeah, it sucked when they said that, because, you know, it's like, oh, wow, really?
Just because it's crushing, isn't it?
It's crushing, yeah, because, like, you think, like, oh, all of this, and then now because of my decision, you know what I mean? And but I get it, you know, I understand what, you know, where they're coming from and so on. So at the end of the day, I knew what I wanted to do, and so I stuck with it.
Well, when you came back from your mission, you had grown. And you had gotten bigger. And that's something that some schools had held against you before, including BYU, if I'm not if I'm not incorrect. They just thought that you were too small to play at BYU, but that changed when you came. Were there other schools? Was that something you had heard from other schools as well, that you were just maybe a little too small?
Most definitely, yeah. I definitely was talking to, it wasn't just BYU. There's other FBS programs that came to the school, and they kind of shared the same thoughts to my coaches, basically saying, like, oh, man, he's a little bit on the small side, you know what I mean? He's a lot smaller than we thought he would be on film, you know? Yeah. And so it definitely did hurt, you know, when I heard that, because I've always had that. Man, it's not about the size of the, you know, the dog, you know, it's about the dog. So, like, I've always had that. But, you know, when I went on my mission, like you said, I definitely grew a couple inches. I got taller and I filled up. I think I left on my mission, I was about like 185 maybe, and then 190. And then, yeah, I came home about almost like 200 pounds, 205, filled up pretty well. It just happened, you know what I mean? You're just out there, you know. And then, yeah, I got home, and I remember I played mainly slot receiver in high school. That was my main position. And so when I got home and I decided to go the JUCO route, yeah, the first thing the junior calls, my JUCO coach told me, was like, yeah, you're gonna play running back, and so you look like a running back, and so, yeah, that's kind of, like I said, man, that was one of the blessings that I got from the mission, for sure, growing physically.
So when you came home, you ultimately decided to play at Cerritos. So why Cerritos? Why was that the place for you?
I mean, it was down the street from my house. Yeah. I mean, and plus Cerritos has a great track record of putting out a lot of guys, and I knew, you know, I grew up with a lot of older cousins and couple of cousins that played at Cerritos, and, you know, there were other, like, I guess, notable JUCOs that were around that were, you know, asking me to come play there and stuff like you know, Mount Sac and Saddleback, some pretty good JUCOs. But at the same time, I thought, it's 5 minutes down the street, I'm going to be working a 9-to-5. I picked up a job, so it's like I still needed to help provide for the family and so forth. So I just felt like it fit my situation at that time. And so I'm a firm believer. It's like, hey, if you're a baller, you're going to play. No matter where you're at, they're going to find you, right? And so, Yeah, I went to Cerritos and I did my first year there, right? Played my freshman year there. And then that's when, it was after my freshman year, yeah. My first year, it was crazy, yeah. Started getting a lot more noticed than I expected, you know. I was already planning to come back one more year because I just thought I wasn't really familiar with the whole JUCO, how it worked. I thought you had to do 2 years.
Right.
And but no, they told me like, no, you're good. If you get offered after 1 year, you're out of here. And so when things started rolling in and, you know, started talking to coaches and making that decision, that's kind of it was pretty cool, you know, all of that happening. So yeah.
Who was in the mix? Obviously BYU started to take notice again. And who else was interested in
Yeah.
You?
So I had if I look back, I think it was one of the biggest schools I was talking to was Cal at the time, Cal Berkeley. I also was talking to some like Montana State. I had a lot of the NC, what's that called? Like some D1AA schools, mm-hmm. Like Sac State. And then I guess the more notable schools were like San Diego State, you know what I mean? Nevada and so forth. So those were the main schools that were really in the mix. Man, I'm trying to remember the other schools, but yeah, it was crazy getting attention like that, you know, after 1 year of playing, you know, and so it was definitely overwhelming, but I was definitely excited, you know.
We had already mentioned, you know, the sudden passing of your mom during COVID, but there's somewhat of a correlation going through that, and then BYU becoming an option for you. Tell everybody the connection there.
Yeah, so like when all that happened, it was kind of crazy because originally I was like, okay, I want to stay home. You know, I had this animosity towards BYU because of high school, right? I was smaller and they told me that I was smaller and it's like, you know, I want to go play somewhere else and, you know, prove them wrong or whatever. And then my mom and dad, they've always had this vision for me that I needed to play at BYU. They wanted me to play here at BYU and at the church school or whatever. And they were just very like excited about that. And so I said, nah, I'm okay. I don't know. And then, you know, when my mom passed away, it was just kind of like, it was weird. Like I remember just sitting there. It was around that time where I was starting to make a decision, right? April and so on. And originally I was talking to the Cal coaches and my plan was to stay home, right? Close around there. And then yeah, when BYU, they started recruiting me a lot harder now. Like they've already offered, but now they're like, hey, you know, you can come here right now. And then I don't know. I just had this feeling, you know, praying about it. I was like, yeah, this is probably where I need to be. And I knew my mom would love for me to be here. I know she this is something that she would want for me. And so that's kind of what happened, you know, when losing her and all those emotions, I flipped over here and I came here and they brought me in. I think I came in like almost a week into fall camp. Fall camp already started. It was just like a lot of things that were going on and, you know, finishing tying some loose ends at home, taking care of some things with my family and things like that, especially with my mom just passed that year. And so, and then that's how I ended up coming here to BYU.
How did, do you feel like you've made her proud by being here? Like, do you feel that confirmation?
Almost definitely. And I think that the biggest way I see that is through, you know, I feel like it's through my wife, you know, my wife Taylin and our family, our little family we have. And just, I think that's where I really feel like I'm making her proud, you know? And so, yeah, I feel like every day since I've been here, you know, getting my degree and graduating and doing all these things that my mom always talked about me accomplishing and doing, you know, at this level. And yeah, it's been awesome to have that feeling of, you know, but then me as a competitor, I always feel like there's always more I want to do. So, you know, I continue to work and try to do as much as I can, you know?
So bringing it back then to football and this season, what are your goals? What are your expectations for what this year can be for you and this team?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna be honest with you. My expectations for myself are pretty high, and I've always have high expectations for myself, right? So I've always had that mindset. You always gotta set the bar high, and so I have expectations to, you know, not just, you know, come out there and play well, but to play well every single game, to put up numbers where I can, you know, really excel, you know. And then at the same time with the offense, we have high expectations to just go out there and put up points, like score, go back to that high explosive offense that we've been known to be able to do the last couple or few years. And so, I mean, I feel like that's the expectation we have for our team and our offense. We're just, I think the one thing also is also being able to execute at a very high level. I feel like we have so much experience and depth at every position. And so we have no excuse to not execute at a high level. And so I feel like that those are my expectations for this year, you know, and win.
That's right.
Win.
That's the end of the day, right?
We got our eyes set on the. Everybody can say what they want to say, but we're super excited. We're aiming high. We're trying to Big 12 conference is what's something that we're aiming for, and we talk about it every single day. We're not just talking about it, but we're working towards it. You know, every workout, everything that we do, you know, we have the mentality to work out as champions, to compete as champions, and so it's exciting.
Well, Hinkley, this interview is one of a couple that I've been able to do with you. I've interviewed you a couple of times, and every time I am done talking with you, I have the same impression. I'm just so impressed with you. It has nothing to do with football, just as a human being. And I want you to know you are an amazing example of your family, of your parents, and an amazing example of this university. And thank you so much. You're such an impressive guy. So thank you for doing this.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you for the kind words, but I appreciate you guys and thank Heavenly Father for continuing to bless all of us with the great opportunities that we have each and every day. So I'm really happy to be here. So thanks, Jason.
You bet. Thank you once again to my guest, Hinkley Rapati. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.